From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. The tragedy in Tucson has sparked new conversations about civility, or the lack of it, in our political discourse. We've heard calls to tone down the rhetoric. This hour, my guest is PM Forney, one of the nation's experts in civility. Forney is the author of Choosing Civility and The Civility Solution, What to Do When People Are Rude. We'll ask him whether we've actually seen a decline in civility, and if so, what can be done about it. Forney will be speaking at Drake University next week. What experiences have you had that tell you our society has become coarser, less civil? How do you respond when someone's rude? Join our discussion after this news. It's The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Civility has been a hot topic recently. We've all heard the calls to tone down the political rhetoric, for instance. This hour, my guest is PM Forney, one of the nation's experts on civility. PM Forney is a professor at Johns Hopkins University. In 1997, he co-founded the Johns Hopkins Civility Project. He is the author of Choosing Civility, the 25 Rules of Considerate Conduct from 2002, and The Civility Solution, What to Do When People Are Rude, from 2008. He is speaking at Drake University next week at Cheslow Auditorium on Thursday, February 2nd at 7 p.m. He joins us now by phone. Good afternoon to you, Professor Forney.
Good afternoon, Ben. How are you?
I am fine. Thank you for joining us for this conversation this afternoon. We want to welcome our listeners and ask our listeners to chip in some experiences. What experiences have you had, Exchange listeners, that tell you our society has become coarser, less civil? What factors do you think are to blame, and how do you respond when someone's rude? Perhaps you have a personal story to tell about how civility challenged rudeness, and perhaps civility won. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org is our email. We're also on Twitter. Give us a tweet at IPR Talk. Let's make sure we know what we're talking about, because I know it can be kind of a slippery concept. What is civility?
Civility is a benevolent awareness of others. We are civil when we are aware of others and we weave restraint, respect, and consideration into the very fabric of this awareness. It's a form of attention, and we cannot have civility without attention, just like we cannot have love without attention, without paying attention to the other person, without tending to his or her needs and desires. So it's a form of benevolent attention.
Mm-hmm. And how is it different than, say, being polite or well-mannered?
Civility comes from a word that means city, the city of flesh and blood, the body politic, the state. And so it has a dimension of community. You are civil when you are a good citizen and a good neighbor. Manners comes from the Latin word manus, from which manuscript and manual come in English. So manners are ways of handling, and we have good manners when we handle others with care. So manners are more on a one-to-one situation. They do not have the social dimension that civility has. When you are civil, we are working for the well-being of the community.
In your book, Professor Forney, you give lots of examples of everyday things that we might do for people or might not do for the other person that contributes or detracts from civility. Can you give us some examples that we might not think of?
Well, one of the interesting things about civility, good manners, and politeness is that now I'm grouping them together just for the purpose of this conversation, because there is overlapping among them. They share many characteristics in common. When we are civil, civility, good manners, and politeness are not trivial, because they do the everyday busy work of goodness. And when we are civil, in a small but significant way, we are ethical. There is a connection between ethics and civility. For instance, how can we be ethical agents in everyday life? Well, one day you are walking along the bank of a river, a child is drowning, you throw yourself into the river and you bring the child to safety. Have you acted as an ethical agent if you do that? Yes, with a vengeance, because you have imperiled your life for the life of another. However, we do not find ourselves in situations of performing such heroics in everyday life, fortunately. But we find ourselves in the situation of not taking somebody else's parking spot at the grocery store. We find ourselves in the situation of letting someone merge into the flow of traffic. We find ourselves in the situation, if we are a boss, to give credit where credit is due for good work done. If still in the workplace, we find ourselves in the situation of welcoming a new co-worker in our midst. Or if we are still in the office, we find ourselves in the situation of resisting the temptation of taking someone else's slice of pizza from the office refrigerator, taking a bite and putting it back. Whenever we engage in these actions, we are ethical, we are civil. These are actions that qualify as civility. But in a small but significant way, we are also ethical agents. And so this connection between ethics and civility, I think, is the most important thing, that the most basic thing that we need to know about what civility is.
Mm-hmm. So when we do not act in a civil manner, when we are uncivil, what's its appeal? What drives us to that corner?
Well, there are many. There are several reasons we are less than polite, less than civil. The major causes of incivility are stress, anonymity, lack of restraint, lack of time, and insecurity. When we are insecurity is a very interesting one, because when we are not secure, for instance, we have a new job or we have a new boss, or we are afraid of losing our job, we often shift the burden of that insecurity upon others in the form of hostility. It's the kick the dog syndrome. The person that is closest to us bears the brunt of our insecurity. But another interesting feature is that these causes, stress, anonymity, lack of restraint, lack of time, and insecurity, work together for the worse. For instance, stress and anonymity work together in traffic. In traffic, we are stressed because we are late for picking up our children at school, we are late for work, and we are in an anonymous environment because the other driver is not really a human being. It's a faceless entity, a sort of an anonymous cogwheel of the machine that he or she is driving. And so these two factors, the fact that we are stressed and the fact that we are in an anonymous environment, contribute to us being less than the civil. And it can contribute, in this case, in traffic, to one of those instances that we call road rage.
Mm-hmm. Now, also, you mentioned anonymity as being a big factor here, and just recently we've had the rise of blogs, blogging, reacting to an article you may see online. You can do that completely anonymously, and there you see some of the rudest remarks you'll ever come across.
Yes, it is really a shame. It is really regrettable that a wonderful thing such as the net is. That for it to have become, in part, we shouldn't forget that there are still wonderful characteristics about and things that we can do with the net, but it has become the dismal collector of the moral toxins of our society. Mm-hmm. And one major reason is exactly that you can act in an anonymous environment on the net. And there is a disinhibition effect when we are communicating on the net. We are not as inhibited as we are in a face-to-face situation. And it was the net, a very informal thing that happened to a very informal society. And that informality turned soon into incivility. Mm-hmm. And we see every day the consequences of that, both on the net, but also on newspapers and magazines where the readers can write without having to identify themselves.
We seem to, most of us seem to feel the decline of civility. Is there a way to measure it past the anecdotes that we run across and the experiences we have every day?
We have some longitudinal studies that tell us that, for instance, students in the 1950s and 60s, especially in the 1950s, actually, were more concerned about social approval of their actions than the students in the 1970s and 80s. And when we are not concerned about what people think about how we act, we do not have an incentive to act in a considerate and kind way. So there are certain parameters that can be gauged, that can be used to gauge this apparent decline. But we shouldn't forget, we should remember something very important, and that is that when we talk about a decline in civility, and I think there is a decline in civility, but there is a decline in certain traditional and established forms of deference and respect. And when we state that, we forget to add that every age elaborates new forms of respect and deference that in part take the place of those that are becoming obsolete. And the example that I always make, or often make, is that of the pregnant woman on the bus. Let's suppose that there are fewer students or youngsters in general who give their seat on a bus to a pregnant woman. Fewer today than in previous generations. Now, that is an indication of a decline in civility, I would say. But when that woman steps into her workplace, the number of men who take her seriously as a professional peer and an intellectual peer is higher today than in my father's generation. And that, I would say, it's a gain in civility. So are we ruder than in times gone by? Yes. Are we more civil than in times gone by? Yes, it depends what you are measuring. I think we are more civil, we are more respectful of those who do not look like us than we were in previous generations. We are more, we have respectful for the planet on which we live. We have an ecological conscience that we do not have. So we have to remember that the glass is also half full.
If you've just joined us, my guest for this hour is P.M. Forney, one of the nation's experts on civility, professor at Johns Hopkins University, author of Choosing Civility and the Civility Solution, What to Do When People Are Rude. And he will be speaking next week. I misspoke earlier. It's February 3rd is Thursday next week at 7 p.m. at Cheslow Auditorium on the campus of Drake University. If you'd like to join our conversation, experiences that tell you our society has become coarser, less civil, thoughts on what factors you think are to blame that haven't been mentioned yet, and how you respond to someone when they are rude. Or perhaps there are brave souls out there, someone who would like to share a personal moment that you yourself still cringe about when you were rude, uncivil, and regretted it. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Our email, tweet us at IPR Talk. Let's go to Rick in Iowa City. Rick, thanks for calling The Exchange. What's on your mind?
Good afternoon. I'd like to ask your guests, what exactly are the rewards of being uncivil? What are the gains? What drives people to it? Is it the ability to show aggression? Do they expect to get their point, especially in public discourse? Do they expect to get their point across better by calling people Nazis and everything else? And I was just wondering if it's behavioral or just, you know, mm-hmm. What is the benefit? And I'll take my answer off here. Thank you.
Thank you, Rick. We touched on this a little bit about the when people are uncivil, why are they uncivil? But I think Rick's a little slightly different facet. What do people think they will gain by incivility?
Well, we must say that many people act in an uncivil way because they do not have other weapons, other quivers, other arrows in their quiver. And so in many cases, they do not even realize that they're being uncivil. That's the way they know how to react. They don't have the other options, other alternatives. But in general, there is the notion that nice guys finish last. That's a very common notion. And because they make themselves vulnerable to people who play hardball. And so the idea is that you should never make yourself vulnerable. And in order not to make yourself vulnerable, you have to raise your voice. You have to go looking. You have to look out for number one. And you have to just, in general, be as manipulative as you can. Now, can you be successful in life by being rude, by being manipulative, by being unkind, and go and adopt a strategy of take no prisoners in life? Yes, you can, for a short time, perhaps, until people get your number. And in the long run, however, you run the risk of ending up alone, without associates, without people that can be part of your platform of social support.
Mm-hmm.
The advantages of being considerate and kind is that people want to be with you. People want to be with people they like, people that are likable, and we cannot help liking the likable. And social skills based on civility makes us likable, and the world is the oyster of the likable.
Mm-hmm.
Social skills strengthen social bonds, and we need social bonds to survive and to thrive. So we can just as we can be successful in being nasty and exploitative to others for a short time, we can be successful, and in this case for a long time, by being considerate and kind. And but even if it was a 50-50 situation, who would choose a jerk over a nice guy? Mm-hmm. Nice guys do not finish last, not if they're also smart. Smart and nice is about the most powerful combination that you can imagine today.
1-866-780-9100 to talk to PM Forney, one of the nation's experts on civility, who is coming to Des Moines, Drake University, next week on Thursday. Dan is in Bettendorf. Dan, welcome to our program.
Hello, thanks.
Yes, go ahead. You're on the air. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I wanted to make a comment that I had read a book by Scott Peck a number of years ago called A World Waiting to Be Born, the theme of which was civility. And one of the things that he said in there that I stuck with me was a quote, and I can't recall who it was he quoted. The gentleman said that a gentleman is someone who never hurts another person's feelings by accident. And meaning that politeness isn't always the best course if you want to be civil. And that's something that I'm afraid I hear an awful lot of, or see an awful lot of, is that if you talk about civility, people think of being polite. And as an example, I would say if you're in a conversation with someone who makes a horrendously bigoted comment, the polite thing would be to ignore it or change the subject. Whereas the civil thing to do would be to point it out,
mm-hmm.
and have some sort of a discussion about it.
This is interesting, Dan, because you bring up the point that Professor Forney brings up in his second book about what to do when you encounter rude behavior, and there are different levels of reaction. Professor Forney, talk about that.
Yes. One of the problems when you are at the receiving end of an act of rudeness, a slight, an act of incivility, is what to do. Is this a battle that you want to fight? We cannot fight all battles. And my rule of thumb is that if the slight comes from a person you know, a friend, a spouse, a coworker, do bring it up. Do not let it fall unquestioned. And the reason for that is that if you don't say anything, that person will do that thing again tomorrow, and the day after, and some other time, and when at some point you are going to explode. And then what is going to happen is that the other person will say, why are you reacting this way? You never told me that you were bothered by this. How was I supposed to know? And now you are doubly at fault. You are at fault because you didn't say anything and because you exploded. So I think that you can respond in a forceful way that is not violent. You have to keep your cool. You have to remain calm and collected and be assertive. Assertiveness is one of the rules of considerate conduct that I have in my first book, Choosing Civility. So we are not supposed to be doormats when we are civil. We should, just to be, it's a form of sincerity, a form of frankness, to let other people know how far they can push the envelope. Because if we do not tell them, they will be keeping pushing and pushing it again. And we always teach others how to treat us by how much we are willing to endure from them.
Dan, thank you very much for that call from Bettendorf.
Sure, thanks.
And let's try to quickly get in one more call before our break. Yale is in Iowa City. Good afternoon, Yale. Quickly, we have a break.
Hi,
we have a break in a couple minutes. Yeah, good afternoon.
Sure thing.
Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. Very quickly, I have a public access television show here in Iowa City, and I found it to be very difficult to recruit guests from either side of "quote unquote" hot button issues: the recently changed gun law, the gay marriage debate, various things that clearly there's a lot of passionate opinions on both sides. And you see that transpire in discussion boards and online newspapers and such, where there is a shroud of anonymity. And that does, of course, sometimes get vitriolic or abusive. But more often than not, it's passionate and civil. But I found it to be very difficult to find people to come out and talk about these things without that shroud of anonymity, talk about them on television. And my question for your guest was, I wonder if people are getting more timid about expressing their opinions on certain issues publicly, because the propensity is now to, you know, call names. It's not unique, obviously, to either political or ideological stripe. I think everyone's kind of equally guilty of that incivility. So I was curious if you thought that the rise in internet discourse has taken away from people's willingness to talk about things publicly.
Great question. Thank you, Gail.
Thank you. I'll listen for my answer off the air.
All right. Thank you. Just less than a minute for that answer, please, Dr. Forney.
The answer is yes, absolutely. The internet has its own rules of engagement, and they are not very civil in many cases. Then what happened is that those rather low standards of behavior are spilling over into the offline world, and that is very regrettable.
And we want to talk more with P.M. Forney, Professor P.M. Forney, one of the nation's experts on civility, when we come back. Stay with us. Professor at Johns Hopkins University, author of Choosing Civility and the Civility Solution, What to Do When People Are Rude. When we come back, we want to pick up on this aspect to talk about how we can disagree without being disagreeable, especially in public debate, as that last caller referenced. The book that Professor Forney wrote has rules of considerate conduct. We'll learn about those. Want to ask also if there are any enemies of civility out there, and if perhaps recently we've reached a turning point in this country. Are we going to transform ourselves into a more civil society? What is your experience with uncivil behavior, coarse attitudes? How do you respond when someone's rude? 1-866-780-9100, The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Back in just a few minutes. And we're talking about civility and the lack of it in our society with P.M. Forney this hour on The Exchange. I'm Ben Kiefer. Professor Forney of Johns Hopkins University is the co-founder of the Johns Hopkins Civility Project, also author of Choosing Civility and the Civility Solution. He'll be speaking at Drake University in Cheslow Auditorium next Thursday, February 3rd. At 7 p.m., we want to invite our listeners to tell us what experiences you've had in the remainder of the hour that tell you our society has become coarser, less civil. What factors do you think are to blame? Are you fighting back? Or will you defend uncivil behavior, uncivil words and language in some cases? Tell us about it. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. theexchange@iowapublicradio.org, or email, tweet us at IPR Talk. Professor Forney with us by phone. In your book, Choosing Civility, you list 25 rules of considerate conduct. Tell us what you think are the most important ones, a couple of them.
The most important ones are the first ones, paying attention, being aware of others. That is the basis of all ethical behavior. We have to be aware of others in order to be willing to help, transfer some of the goodness that we have in our heart into the situation of need of other people. So I would say that those are the paying attention, being aware of your environment, and being willing to intervene for the better. Those are the basics.
What are the rules of civility when it comes to making necessary critical comments about someone or someone's actions? Can you give us guidelines there? How can we be disagreeable without being unruly, uncivil?
Well, you have to see what motivates you to be critical of the other person. A criticism should always add something positive rather than detracting and focusing only on the negative. So you have to be sincere with yourself and ask before formulating, before uttering the critical remark, what are the reasons that impel me to do this? Are they more less than noble? Do I want just to be critical in order to manipulate this person, to make myself feel better by making this person feel bad about him or herself? So you have to question your motivations.
Mm-hmm. Now, are there groups or specific people? You've been speaking on civility, writing about civility for many years now. Are there groups or specific people you can point to who are, you might say, enemies of civility, don't believe in what you're trying to do? Who have been your chief critics?
There are certainly people who have objection to civility. And I have myself objections to civility in certain situations that are extreme.
For instance?
The rules of civility and politeness want us to be respectful of the peace and quiet of others. But on the other hand, I think that if we want to make our voice heard in a political rally and contribute to the democratic life of society through our political action, it is incumbent upon us, and it should be permitted to us, and it shouldn't be considered uncivil to raise our voices.
Mm-hmm. What about at war, in combat? That has to be an exception as well, right?
Well, yes, but these are all extreme situations. What I'm interested in is the everyday, the amelioration, the bettering of the quality of life that takes place in the everyday, when we eliminate these forms of micro-cruelty and macro-indignity that we call incivility.
1-866-780-9100, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org, your thoughts on civility. Rocky is joining us from Cedar Rapids. Thanks for waiting, Rocky. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I worked in retail, and I was just wondering if I think that contributes a lot to the uncivil problem in America. I worked for a small retailer, and now working with big boxes in a big box, it seems like the larger a place is, the more unpersonable it is, the more people are apt to be uncivil. You know, like you're not going to see that person at church or around town that you're dealing with, so you really don't have any care in that. And when I lived in a smaller town and stuff, it was like people seemed to be more civil because they would have to see you at church or around town. And, you know, that's kind of my take on things. And you feel like things are very impersonable dealing with some big companies like, say, credit card companies, your direct TV cable and stuff, like you're just another number. And that caused the incivility.
Interesting point. Here again, Rocky, Professor Forney, the distance, the anonymity coming in to play.
That's
exactly.
That is very true. And that's why many communities around the country are organizing civility initiatives, having all of the members of civil society rally around the notion of civility, so that by getting to know one another, they shatter the screen of anonymity that separates us and is so much responsible for uncivil behavior. There are all communities all over the country, from Hershey, Pennsylvania, to Duluth, Minnesota, to Cleveland, to Howard County in Maryland, and colleges, four-year colleges, community colleges, like Monroe College in the state of New York. But there are dozens and dozens that organize civility years, civility days, civility weeks. And one of the first things that happen is that the people who otherwise would not come together, would not meet one another, they do. And from that moment, they are not strangers to one another.
As a matter of fact, Professor Forney, you are speaking as part of the Better Together series put on by Character Counts in Iowa, the Community Foundation of Greater Des Moines, Drake University, and the Interfaith Alliance,
Alliance of Iowa. Yes.
Yes. And joining us now in the studio of Iowa Public Radio in Des Moines, Connie Ryan Terrell, Executive Director of the Interfaith Alliance of Iowa. Good afternoon. Connie, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Connie, welcome to our program. And as PM Forney was just talking about, some people are taking action against incivility. You are a member, the executive director of the Interfaith Alliance of Iowa, which is certainly doing that. Remind us again of the purpose of this civility series of which PM Forney is part of and how it came about.
Thank you for having me. It came about as a conversation between a number of us who felt like we needed to do something in our own community of Des Moines, but also across the state of Iowa on the issue of civility. And so it was a conversation with the organizations and the leaders of those organizations, Barry Griswell, David Maxwell, Scott Racker, and myself. And how could we have an impact in our communities to create a sense of urgency around the issue of civility. And so in the past year, we've had those conversations and we have brought in a couple of other speakers, and we're very pleased to be bringing in Dr. Forney next week as well. And really the purpose is to draw attention to the issue and our own personal responsibility for creating a sense of urgency and to do something about it.
In the short time this has been going on, this effort has been made, do you feel you're making progress? What signs do you see, if so?
I see lots of signs. Just the fact that people are having conversation about the issue and what we need to do about it. And after we had our last speaker, Bill Bishop, in September, there were a number of people who contacted our individual organizations and wanted to do something themselves, either through an organization that they represented or some kind of community group, a faith community, a variety of different ways, and what could they do? And they were asking those questions. So just raising the issue and bringing people into that conversation, I think, is important.
This might be a good time, Connie, then, to put out information, contact information, so people, wherever they're listening, may be able to link up with the movements going on in Iowa, the Interfaith Alliance of Iowa. How do people find out more?
Sure. Each of the organizations certainly has their own website. And for us, Interfaith Alliance, it's interfaithallianceiowa.org. The general website for the project, Better Together, Creating Community Through Civility, is the joint project of the four different organizations. And you can find that at bettertogetheriowa.com. And there's information about the event next week with Dr. Forney, as well as links to each of the four organizations and why they are part of the project.
Dr. Forney, you mentioned before that these types of events bring together people to have conversations that may not otherwise take place. But I want to be a bit of a devil's advocate here and say that perhaps people could say, well, you're preaching to the choir. Are people who most need civility the ones who are going to turn up to hear your message? Probably not, right?
Well, first of all, Connie, hello, how are you?
I'm very well, Dr. Forney. It's good to hear your voice.
Yes, it's absolutely true. I find myself preaching to the choir a lot, but the choir needs to be preached to as well, because the choir needs to have its values validated. And so the choir then becomes advocate, and the news, the good news of civility are spread in that way. But certainly it's true. We very often, the organizations that invite me to speak, observe that, yes, we had a very good turnout, but there were this person, they did not come and they needed to come. But that's the nature of the business.
Of course, civility has become a big concern in our society in recent weeks, of course, because of the Tucson tragedy, but also at other times in our recent history. Professor Forney, do you think we have reached or are reaching some kind of turning point when we have a concerted effort on many people, enough people's part to enable a transformation to more civil discourse and behavior?
We have reached an important point that when I started working on civility about 15 years ago, I did not think that we would reach so quickly. And that is what is different now than from what was true at the end of the last century or the turn of the century 10 or 12 years ago. Is the notion that the notion of civility is put, it has been put on the national agenda for discussion. It is one of the hot topics in the country. And this is already a wonderful result. If you Google words such as civility and manners in the school's curricula, you will have hundreds of hits of schools where the topic of civility and manners has been presented by a cottage industry of people who cater to the needs of these schools that have learned, whose heads of schools are convinced that this is a necessary step. We have to start with the new generation. So there is an awareness in the air that was not here, that was not in place a few years ago. And so I think we have to turn an important point.
PM Forney with us, along with Connie Ryan Terrell, talking about civility this hour. Jessica in Waterloo writes in an email, I am a social worker working with juvenile delinquent girls. Many of them express that having a bad attitude will get me far in life, or are generally rude and don't seem to care. I suspect this is a common attitude among their peers at school. This is much more complex, but I would like to ask if Professor Forney has any advice as to how to convey the importance of civility to these girls in a way they will understand. And many parents out there know that you don't get far often with teenagers just explaining the importance of something like civility, asking for it, requiring it in-house. It falls on deaf ears often. What do you do then, Professor?
You have to convey the message that civility is something that benefits not only the person at the receiving end of it, but also the person that is being civil. Kindness is good to the kind, first and foremost. We know, for instance, that children who have been trained in civility and good manners are less likely to become abusive and violent adults. We know that they are more likely to make friends, and children who make friends are less likely to be bullied. Social intelligence is a better predictor of success in life and in school than the intelligence that we measure with IQ. The intelligence that we measure with IQ is a threshold intelligence. It lets us put the foot in the door. There is a good position, you're smart, you get the position. But 10 years down the line, the person who will have made more strides in the company or the organization is not necessarily the person who entered with the highest IQ, but is more likely to be the person who entered with the better ability to entertain harmonious relationships with others, who has the good social skills based on civility. And so this is the message that has to reach the parents. What is in it for their children? The importance of being kind and considerate. Can you be, as I said before, can you be successful by raising your voice, by being rude, by being manipulative? Yes, you can, but for a short time. Those young women who are behaving, maybe because they don't seem to have any other choice, given the environment in which they live, they are behaving in that way, may reach results, but they are results that are ephemeral.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In the long run, it would be much more advantageous even for them to acquire a profile of a person who listens, who is calm and collected, and therefore is listened to in return, and acquires the reputation of being a carrier of wisdom.
I wonder if there are enough role models out there for civil behavior that is effective and cool. Connie, Ryan, Terrell, let me start with you and then go to Professor Forney. Do kids look up to people who are civil? Who are they if they do?
I think that they do. They may not say that or express that directly, but I think that children and particularly our teenagers, our youth, do that. I'm involved with youth in a number of different ways, and particularly in my faith community. And I think that they see people around them that they know have that sense of civility and treat people with respect and kindness, as Dr. Forney is talking about. And they react to that in a positive way. And I think it is incumbent upon us as adults that we display that kind of leadership for our children and our youth.
Mary in Iowa City writes, are there tools for encouraging civility, especially when encountering an uncivil individual? Are there resources online where I can learn such techniques? Well, Dr. Forney's books are good places to start there, Mary. Online, I'm sure you can find more information about it. I want to go back to this point about the media and role models. Dr. Forney, where do you see the role models? Can you name a public figure that especially young people would look up to who you think best embodies civility?
I think that President Obama would be a likely candidate for that. Not only does he project an aura of power in repose that is the aura of the true leader, but not only does he behave publicly in a way that can be defined without any problems civil. But he also has been, from the very beginning of his public life, an advocate of civility. And in the wake of the killings and in Tucson, he presented the nation with a wonderfully inspiring speech about the need of civility. I was a little bit disappointed that during the State of the Union the other night, he did not do what many media had predicted, that he would have talked about civility. It's unfortunate because it was a wonderful occasion to promote civility. But to answer very quickly your question, I would look at a leader like him for our children to assume as a model.
And very quickly, before we have to end this hour, it was interesting to read in your book, Dr. Forney, that your start in your interest in civility, at least you talk about coming to this country from Italy and noticing the difference when you got on a bus. Tell us that quickly.
Yes, many Europeans think that Americans are ruder than Europeans, and I do not think that that is the case. They mistake American informality for incivility. Are Americans more informal? Yes, they are. When I came to this country and I went to a doctor's, the nurse said, "Pierre, that the doctor will see you now." And she called me by my name. I was 27 at the time, and the last time that someone in Europe had called me, a stranger providing the service, called me by my first name, I must have been 13 or 14. So I thought, these Americans are very rude. I don't know this person. How does she dare to do this? But then the next day, I would take the bus, the number one bus from Santa Monica to UCLA. I was a graduate student at the time. And I witnessed something that I had never witnessed before in Europe. The people who were climbing onto the bus were saying good morning to the driver, and those who were exiting said thank you. And they thanked the driver for his service. And I had never seen anything like that in Europe. And so I said, well, yesterday I thought that these Americans were very rude, but today I see that they can be very, very polite and very civil.
Professor Fornin, so we've run out of time.
I thought about that, mm-hmm. and I realized that there was a difference between informality and incivility.
Professor Fornin, thank you for joining us for this uplifting hour. And
thank you very much for inviting me.
We look forward to welcoming you here in Iowa at the event at Drake University, speaking next Thursday, February 3rd at 7 p.m. In Shaislo Auditorium. Connie Ryan Terrell, thank you very much for joining us as well.
Thank you for having me.
The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.